And that's when Felipe like finished off class by saying, "A commodity only exists in the mind of the inept." And I was like, "Damn."
Yeah, that's Felipe for you, dropping some knowledge. No, I remember he also opened up the class by saying, "The way we're going to do this is I'm a big fan of jazz, and we're just going to be, you know, we're just going to be riffing."
Hello, and welcome to Business Beyond Usual. My name is Charlie Grant, and in this episode, I'm here to bring you a conversation that I had with a former Michigan Ross student about a pretty successful project he's been working on called Market Snacks. If you're not familiar, Market Snacks is a daily email newsletter that makes financial news quick, fun, and easily digestible. It's also a daily podcast that, as we record this, is among the top most popular downloaded business podcasts on the iTunes Store. Watch out, Planet Money. They're coming for you. Early this month, I called up Jack Kramer, former Michigan Ross student and Market Snacks co-founder, as well as my section mate, because I had a few questions I wanted to ask him. And that's what today's show will be. You'll hear my conversation with Jack. Together with his partner, Nick Martell, Jack has been featured on CBS, CNN, Fortune, Fox Business, Fast Company, and they were both selected to the Forbes 30 Under 30 list this last year for their work on Market Snacks. I wanted to catch up with Jack to hear how everything was going and what life has been like since leaving Michigan Ross. Before we get to the conversation, though, why don't you go ahead and subscribe to Business Beyond Usual and leave us a rating or a review? Telling other people that you like the show helps the audience grow and encourages us to keep making great episodes for you guys. You can also send us an email at bbupodcast@umich.edu if you want to get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. That's bbupodcast@umich.edu. Okay, so enough of that. Here it is, my discussion with Jack Kramer of Market Snacks.
I have as my guest today Jack Kramer of Market Snacks. Jack and I were section mates before he departed to pursue Market Snacks full time. And Jack, we share a certain affinity, I think, for a small New England state that's kind of near and dear to our hearts. Can you help me out with that one?
Vermont.
Yeah, there we go.
We're both huge fans of Ethan Allen in Vermont. And I remember one of our first interactions, you told me that that your construction project for a solar energy project resulted in you having this incredible piece of Vermont maple tree, and you wondered if I had any use for it, which is a classic question from one Vermont fan to another Vermont fan.
Yeah, it's true. You know, what am I going to do with this giant slab of red oak that I've got? I really want to turn it into a coffee table or a bed frame or something. But yeah, that thing is still it's still drying. It's a really remarkable piece of wood. But yeah, it's you know, right out of southern Vermont. And you are originally from Brattleboro, right? And went to Middlebury?
Yep, that's right. Brattleboro, born and raised, lived there my whole childhood, and kind of pursued the childhood dream, which was to go to Middlebury, which is where my parents went to school as well. And I played football there, which was another childhood dream. So I lived in Vermont through and through until I graduated from college.
Yeah, and so can you tell me a little bit about how you came to end up in Michigan, and how you discovered Ross and what brought you to this MBA program in particular?
Definitely. So I got a German and economics double major at Middlebury, and Charlie, I feel like you just asked me to do my odyssey.
I know. Launch right into it, man. You know, it becomes muscle memory, right? It's
you're getting
PTSD right now.
I haven't. I do have a little bit of PTSD. I haven't done this in a while, but went into finance in New York, kind of went to the big city coming from Vermont, and worked at a German bank, the New York branch of a German bank, for about 5 years, which was a great experience. But at some point while I was a banker, I decided to start Market Snacks, which is my news media company. And we break down the top business and finance news stories in an email newsletter. So one day after work, my buddy and I just decided to, you know, we had a bunch of pent up creative energy, and we knew that there was a problem that business and finance news wasn't serving news in a way that was digestible to the majority of our generation. So we tackled that problem after kind of having a toast at the bar, deciding we were going to start this project. And I ended up working on Market Snacks on the side of my job as a banker for like my last 3 years there. And the fact that I was doing Market Snacks on the side of my banking job, I think was evidence that I didn't want to be in finance or banking directly the rest of my life. So that was one reason I decided to get a graduate degree. And I came to Michigan because I was applying to MBA and Master of Public Policy dual programs. So I actually started in Michigan in the fall of 2016. I'm at the Ford School and at the Ross School. And I just have this kind of core belief that as more industries and business sectors get disrupted by technology and what have you, that the importance of public policy and regulation and kind of cooperation with government agencies is going to be more and more important. You saw it happen with Uber, with transportation. You're seeing it happen with Airbnb in the hotel industry. As companies get transformed, new laws and new regulations need to get written. And so I thought a business degree and a public policy degree was kind of the perfect fit for me. Now, so I came to Michigan actually, you know, being a full-time dual degree student, but I kept on scaling Market Snacks on the side. So I was kind of a side hustler through and through. And I'd like bolt out of strategy class, take that 10-minute break we have in between the long class to like quickly brainstorm what stories we're going to cover with my partner. So it was kind of a, I definitely was very busy. Everybody at the business school program knows this, but I was juggling responsibilities and things kind of throughout my time at Ross as well.
For sure. And it's really interesting. I'll be honest, I lost focus of the fact that you're also involved with the Ford School and you've got that public policy focus as well.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I'm an avid consumer of lots of different podcasts, but one that I was just listening to is an older one from Make Me Smart with Kai Ryssdal and Molly Wood. And it was talking about a lot of the role that some of the tech companies in our life play in terms of the information that gets disseminated out there. And so, I would love, you know, your perspective as a media professional, you know, somebody who's out there in the business of creating content and news. I mean, how do you, build that bond of trust with your listeners? I mean, is that something that you guys think about a lot?
Oh yeah. I mean, at Market Snacks, we want to be the trusted source of business and financial news for our generation. And when we're deciding how we're going to cover a story or, you know, do we need to fact check that point or do we need to provide further context to make sure that what we said wasn't misleading? We're always thinking about trust level with our listeners. And, you know, we always err on the side of do whatever is going to, you know, win the trust of our listeners. And, that's a hugely important part of Market Snacks.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Just so I understand the timeline, did Market Snacks start as a newsletter and then became a podcast, or was it a podcast and then a newsletter? Can you help me understand sort of which one led to the other?
Yeah. It started as an anonymous blog. We started up WordPress, which was a free like website hosting platform, and we started writing about the European debt crisis way back then. And we weren't sure that the banks we worked for would approve of this. You know, compliance departments tend to just say no. So my partner and I started writing about the news anonymously. Our name was not anywhere on the website. And we did it that first day, and we loved doing it. It was a great creative outlet at the end of the day for us. So we actually never stopped. Still through today, we have not missed a day of like stock market action. In our newsletter. So eventually that sort of blog posting became a daily email newsletter that came to people's inboxes in the morning. And eventually we monetized that newsletter with ads and with a syndication partnership. And once we started generating revenue, we figured, wow, we definitely have to come clean with our banks or we could get in trouble here. So I kind of built up the courage, asked my manager. I explained to him that, you know, I was performing well in my day job as a banker, and actually doing Market Snacks kept me abreast of the market, kept me abreast of interest rates. And I was able to use this knowledge that I built through Market Snacks to, you know, kind of impress some of my clients. So it was kind of a no brainer for him to approve. He approved it. We started Market Snacks LLC, which was our company. And, so that sort of corporate structure where Nick and I were full-time employees at companies and did Market Snacks on the side and generated some advertising and syndication revenue, that existed all the way through until this summer. So it was only, my Section 3 classmates were amazing and supportive when when my partner and I got selected for the Forbes 30 Under 30 list. And that was a huge media and publicity moment that happened in November for us. And as a result of that increased publicity that we got reached out to by a production company that is probably not well known by any of the listeners. It's called Cadence 13. But Cadence 13 is the production company that has created Pod Save America, the hugely successful politics podcast. And they have actually a huge roster of other podcasts that they've done, including The Skim, Gwyneth Paltrow's podcast, a Recode podcast about tech news. These guys really know what they're doing, and they just kind of reached out to us. They emailed Market Snacks and said, hey, like, love what you guys are doing in the newsletter. Saw your Forbes 30 Under 30 selection. Have you thought about doing podcast? And like, the quick answer was no. We hadn't thought about it at all. I just started listening to podcasts myself and thought it was like the best use of my walk to school and walk back from school to home to make sure that I stayed on top of the news, even though I was crazy busy with everything, like all my classmates were. But I hadn't considered turning Market Snacks into a podcast, to be honest. And we took the call, and you know, the guy told us that there is a void, in his opinion, in the daily business and finance news podcast space. So there's a lot of podcasts that cover business and finance news weekly, but there were very few dailies. And he said that kind of personality-driven news, like what Nick and I, my partner and I, provide at Market Snacks, that's the kind of stuff that people like to come back to every day because they build a relationship as a listener with the host. And that's how it kind of stays sticky and gets people listening every day. And so we actually flew into New York City in January of 2018 for basically an audition or like a demo. And they just told us to basically take the content from our newsletter that day and turn it into a podcast, you know, basically cover the same three or four stories. I remember we covered Disney, which had just reported its earnings. And I love talking about, you know, whatever the huge Star Wars or Avengers blockbuster of that moment was. We talked about the XFL, which is Vince McMahon's like second professional football league he was planning. And then we talked about one other thing, and we totally just behaved like ourselves. And we were encouraged to maximize our personalities because in person, people can get a sense of you through your facial expressions and your gesticulations and whatnot. But on a podcast, it's just your voice. So we really like kind of amped up the energy. And the guy said, like, you guys are great. I think you could be successful. And he invited us to launch a podcast with him. And that's when I had to decide, you know, was I going to pursue the corporate internship that I had been interviewing for, or was I going to do my own thing and take a risk and go for it? And that was all like this past spring. It was pretty recently.
The podcast now, here we are, it's November of 2018, and the podcast is doing fantastic. I mean, you guys are, you're number two right now, I think, in business news on Apple. Is that correct?
Yeah. And they selected us in August as like one of their five podcasts of the week that they featured at the top of the iTunes store. So that was a huge moment for us.
Absolutely. So you guys have clearly, I think, you're onto something here. You've touched a nerve. I was wondering if you could speak to, what do you think it is about podcasting and business news that, I mean, you spoke to it a little bit earlier, but what is really that touchstone for our generation? And, you know, what do you think your subscribers are trying to, what is it about this format that's really kind of speaking to people?
So when we launched the newsletter, you know, we recognized that most business and finance news was pretty much the same. It was objective. It stated the facts without much opinion or commentary with regards to those facts. And it was dry and full of jargon and, quite frankly, kind of boring. Unless you were working in finance and sort of needed this for your day-to-day, it didn't make sense to read too much of kind of the conventional status quo finance news from when I started working in finance. And so a key thing we wanted to do with Market Snack was expand the number of people who read business and finance news. So we wanted to kind of democratize business and finance news because it's so important. I mean, we just had the financial crisis. I started working in finance in the wake of that financial crisis just to be met by another debt crisis in Europe. It was dominating our politics. it heavily influenced, you know, society, and the things that we buy every day is all influenced by business and markets. So we think it's important that not just people who work in finance follow this stuff, but people who care what's going on in society and people who care about doing well at their jobs, you know, you kind of need to know the trends and the insights that we provide on our podcast and in our newsletter. So we have a few ways that we catered our material to sort of our millennial generation and catered it to people who weren't, you know, just people who worked in finance. First is we kept it quick, and our generation has a ton of pressure to be high performing, and you know, everyone's got a side hustle, everyone's got a gig going on. The job market is really tough. None of us can afford houses yet, and we're all incredibly busy, and we all know that. And we knew that when we started Market Snacks, and that's why we kept our newsletter to just the top three or four stories. And we curate that for you. So a Market Snacks reader or Market Snacks daily listener can trust that they don't need to go out there and survey the whole business and finance news landscape. They can trust that we're going to tell you the stories that you need to know. So whatever is the big headline story, we're going to cover that, and we're going to do it quickly for you. So our podcast is only 15 to 20 minutes long every day, which is perfect for your commute, perfect for your morning workout. I personally listen in the shower, which is kind of messed up that I listen to my own voice in the shower, but I have to make sure that everything went well. And so it's kind of great for our busy generation, which has so much pressure to like multitask. It's the perfect way to catch up on news while continuing like your morning routine and not necessarily having to sit down with your coffee and read the newspaper like our parents did. We might not have the luxury to do it that way. And so podcasting is just the fact that it only requires one of your five senses. I think that's great because it lets you do your other thing, like drive to work or walk to school.
Yeah. So for me, it was actually, it was basically driving from my home in Cambridge, Massachusetts up to wherever in Vermont I was going, you know, which typically was a, you know, a 2.5 hour drive or something like that, trying to go to, you know, Bennington or Brattleboro or, you know, Barton, Vermont somewhere. You know, but that's where I would try to go to learn about the energy industry. You know, I'd listen to a Green Tech Media podcast, or, you know, sometimes I would try to, you know, this was pre-Market Snacks, obviously, but I'd try to learn about, you know, business investing or things like that. So that, you know, a lot of what you said resonates with me in terms of, you know, coming out of your banking job and telling your manager that, you know, impressing your manager with your knowledge of what's going on in the market. I mean, as someone who listens to your podcast, thank you for giving me a resource to allow me to try to impress my manager with what's going on, you know, with market knowledge and that sort of thing. And I don't think I'm alone there either. I would say one question that I had, just in terms of, you know, this podcast is going to go out to a lot of prospective students as well as current students at Ross. And so for those prospective MBAs that are thinking about coming to business school, making that decision as you did, and thinking about coming to Ross, number one, you know, if they're interested in this kind of getting their voice out there in this media format, what are some resources both at Ross and in general that you think they should be aware of for, you know, maybe thinking about their podcast and, you know, resources to help them maybe try to put that some structure to those ideas and kind of get things off the ground?
Cool. First of all, thank you, Charlie, for listening to our podcast and for speaking so well about it. I'm really pumped that that you can listen to 12 podcasts on your drive from Cambridge to Vermont. So thanks for that, dude. But also, I do have some tips I've learned about producing a podcast. The first, I think I mentioned earlier, is to really max out your personality and make sure that every little inch of the audio waves that are coming through are captured with every part of who you are. So I think in the podcasting space, people like to build a relationship with you and learn about you. And so you need to open up about who you are. You need to be 110% of yourself. And that means bring up the energy. You cannot start speaking into the mic unless you are on your A game and like ready to give it all, because, people are dedicating their time. And like my podcast is only 15 to 20 minutes, but that's a lot of time for people to dedicate and invest to listen to me. So I make sure to like absolutely bring everything I have each podcast. So if you're ever feeling like you're about to begin your podcast recording and you're like slouched in your chair, that's not okay. Like stand up, do some jumping jacks or start like fist bumping or whatever you have to do. Like give somebody nearby a high five because you need to have that energy when you start your podcast. Another piece of feedback I have is that people really like the routine that we've created with in our podcast Market Snacks Daily. So we open it off by announcing the three stories that we're going to talk about. Then we quickly say what happened with markets broadly, whether the Dow and the S&P went up or down, and we quickly say why. Then we talk about something that's happened in pop culture that might vaguely be related to the markets. But even if it's not related to the markets, it's hilarious, and we want to make sure that our listeners know about it so that they have something to talk about at work or whatever. Then we hit our three stories, and each story has a beginning, a middle, and a takeaway. The takeaway is our end. We repeat what we said, and then we have a little outro where we thank everyone for listening. So I really encourage you to try to build a beginning and a middle and end to your podcast that makes sense, that's engaging and fun, because people like to know what's coming and know you know what they're getting themselves into every time they push play on the podcast. And then the last one I guess I'll mention is that not just in business and finance news, which is what I'm doing, but in presentations or in investor pitches or, you know, you're just pitching a new idea to your boss, storytelling is hugely powerful. And so instead of telling what you want to say in some formulaic way that might make sense, the better way to do it is to captivate your audience and to have that hook by telling it in the storm in the form of a story. So those are three quick best practices we've learned. Be 110% of yourself. Have a routine, you know, tend to do it in a beginning, a middle, and end. And then tell it in an engaging and fun story. So those are three things. I also just want to mention, though, how much work our production company does. So my partner, Nick, and I, we're responsible for researching, brainstorming, and outlining the content. So we need to speak into the mics, but that's all that we have to do. And the rest is handled by our production company. So they actually help source advertisements for us, which is great. They edit the material. If my partner and I aren't in the same location, they'll take two audio files and sync them together so it sounds as if we're in the same room. They do an incredible job with that. But if we had to do this ourselves, that would just add a bunch of work to the process, and I don't think we'd be able to handle it. So there may be people out there, you know, to get advice on how to do it without the help of a production company, you're going to have to go to someone else because I haven't done that part. But don't think that that's like an insignificant part of the process.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, just talking about the production process and kind of your role in producing Market Snacks on a daily basis. You mentioned that you guys do a lot of your own research, and you know that's what really lends your unique perspective and voice to this. I guess one question is, what are some of your techniques for getting that research done while managing all your other pursuits with regards to growing the business? And then the other kind of following question, if you want to speak to it right now, I don't want to put you too much on the spot, is there a potential possibility that in the future you could be integrating perhaps some additional voices to Market Snacks and expand into things like sports or, you know, other areas of coverage? You know, I don't know what your plans are for the future.
I'm thinking about your second question. I've actually seen some news sources out there that do an awesome job sort of summarizing in a quick digestible way sports news, and people have approached my partner and me about doing a Market Snacks for a different kind of news. That's actually not our plan. Our plan is to become the business and finance news source for the next generation. And currently our core products are the podcast, the daily email newsletter, and we want to hit a third leg of the stool, which is a short format video breakdown of what happened in the markets. I think Instagram TV or like YouTube is a perfect home for that. But we think our formula of curated news that's quick and that's digestible and that's actually entertaining to watch can be scaled across another medium. And there's just a lot of work we have to do to market this thing to make sure that it reaches the full potential and we grow our audience as big as possible. So we do not have plans to expand to sports or any other types of news. But we definitely want to, we're definitely thinking about sort of incorporating more interviews into our content. So that's the second, that's the answer to the second question. I mentioned earlier that we are not just objectively reporting the news. A lot of news organizations do that very well. But my partner, Nick, and I, what we're doing is we're bringing in our various experiences. You know, whether it's that I personally grew up in the state of Vermont and saw like Ben and Jerry's go from like a hippie ice cream company to sell to Unilever to become like this weird political activist ice cream company now. Or like Nick's experience growing up in New York City and like never having rode a bike until he was 25. We bring those experiences as well as my experience working in finance. And crucially, that I started getting an MBA and I'm not done with it, but I'm hoping to finish it out actually eventually, especially now that Ross has launched this part-time online MBA.
Yeah, you've got the M and the B, but you gotta get that A, you know? So
yeah, that's exact. Can I take that from you? I need to steal that.
No, go for it.
To steal that expression. Serious. That's great.
Yeah.
But anyway, we think it's crucial to provide not just news, but insights. And so I am sort of taking the stuff I learned in strategy class and in marketing at Ross, chatting with my colleagues who work in whatever industry or whatever sector for the story that I'm covering in. And I'm also taking my personal understanding of economics and business and my having worked in finance, taking all those pieces, putting them together, and trying to tell our listener on the podcast kind of the crucial insight that is driving a company's pivot from one thing to another thing. I want to give like the top business school strategy and insights to our listeners so that, you know, we're not dumbing anything down for them. We're trying to make it as insightful as possible and really pass on that knowledge so that you understand why businesses are doing what they're doing. You understand, why the government is thinking about, you know, beefing up or watering down the Dodd-Frank Act and what impact that has. I think I'm just really passionate that it's so important for people to be well-informed for like this country to work right and for people not to get ripped off. And understanding business models, strategies, and trends are crucial for all that. And so it's our big differentiator, in my opinion, or one of them, is that we're not just all about objectively stating the facts. We are giving you kind of the bold insights and the cutting edge stuff that's being taught at business schools and being discussed in like corporate boardrooms.
Wow, that's a really great way to synthesize it and come together. So thank you for that. Thank you for that description.
Thank you.
And you're leading actually right into my rapid fire kind of wrap up questions. So question number one, what was your favorite class that you took at Ross?
It was strategy. No question about it. First of all, at the end of the first half of the strategy class, you're supposed to act like you're the CEO and you have to like make the decision now that we understand all the facts of the case. I felt a lot of pressure to like make the right decision. The Ross MBA program did a really good job like imitating the circumstances and the pressure that the real, you know, business managers in the case had to deal with. And I remember like, I think we were supposed to be Nintendo at one point, and Nintendo had to respond to like PlayStation coming out with the PlayStation 2. And the Nintendo Wii was a big hit, but like you need to, you know, what have you done for me lately, Nintendo? It was tough. And I actually felt through those case studies that I was getting experience, which I thought was pretty cool. Also, in one case, it was about Cemex, the Mexican cement company. And all of our assumptions throughout the whole discussion was that cement was a commodity. And then one student in the back like raised their hand. I actually forgot who it was. Maybe you know, Charlie, because you were there with me. But they raised their hand and they said, actually, like the company had this much revenue and they sold this many tons of cement. I did the math. You know, that's $61 per ton of cement. That's 25% better than the rest of the market. So clearly cement isn't a commodity and people were paying more for Cemex's brand of cement. And that's when Felipe like finished off class by saying, "A commodity only exists in the mind of the inept." And I was like, damn. Honestly, I just felt like the strategy class like gave you a lot of big picture experience and understanding about, like, every day you learned a ton about a different industry, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's Felipe for you, dropping some knowledge. No, I remember he also opened up the class by saying, the way we're going to do this is I'm a big fan of jazz, and we're just going to be riffing. You know, we're going to go back and forth, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I remember too, actually, one of the people in our section was, again, I can't remember their name, but it was someone who actually had experience in the cement industry from Thailand. I don't think they worked for Cemex, but it was someone who had clearly been in the building materials industry, and they had some great insights. So, yeah, good one. All right. Okay, so the last question I got for you, and then I'll let you go. What do you miss most about being a Ross student?
The camaraderie. The camaraderie for sure. I had some concerns that, especially, like, I started in the public policy school. I did my first full year there, and I only took one class at Ross. So I was like a 40 through and through my first year and a Rosser through and through my second year. That's why you kind of forgot, Charlie, that I was even at Ford. It's because that year that we had together last year, I didn't take any classes at the public policy school. But they had sort of warned me at the public policy school. They're like, hey, man, you know, people are intense there. It's all cutthroat, competitive, trying to get a job. And I expected there could be some backstabbing and stuff to try to get positions. But I had a couple interviews for internships for General Motors and Ford, and I was thinking about doing that. Ultimately, I decided now is the time to do Market Snacks full time. This is my entrepreneurial opportunity. It's been great as a side hustle business, but I've learned enough in my first year of my MBA program that now is the time to seize this chance, because it won't happen again for me. Like, it's incredible that I have this one big chance, but this is it. I got to go for it. And so I took the risk and went for it. But just a reminder, I was interviewing for a job for General Motors or for Ford. I can't remember which. And I saw one of my buddies come out of the room, and I expected him to like keep his head down and walk the heck out of there. Instead, he like chats me up. He wishes me a ton of luck. He even like encourages me a little bit and tells me, you know, a thing or two about the personality of the interviewer. I couldn't believe it. Like, that totally killed any misconception I had that business school programs were, just cutthroat competition for a finite number of the same number of jobs and internships. It's camaraderie and everyone's supporting each other, and case studies are brutal, and, we all do it together, and some great late nights working on the same projects and just being impressed by all the stuff that each of us brought to the table.
Yeah, you can definitely echo that sentiment. You know, it's been really great to, I feel like I've learned about as much from my classmates at Ross as I have from the classroom, you know, so it's really there. That's what makes the difference. And that's the great resource. Well, Jack, thank you so much for making yourself available on this Friday evening. I hope you have some good plans for the weekend. Are you going to stick around and, out in the West Coast, or
I'll be on the West Coast this weekend. But I'm going to track down the Michigan bar and check out the Penn State game.
Yeah, good call.
Are you going to the game?
I don't have my ticket, but I have a good feeling about if I go to the bus and you know, just meet some people there, maybe a ticket will find its way to me. So it's supposed to be a nice day, and you know, it's starting to get a little chilly in the air out here in Michigan, but. Should be a good game, and Michigan's on a really good tear this year for sure. So
I know, I'm pumped about it. Well, Charlie, thank you for having me on. I miss all you guys, and we'll definitely reach out next time I visit, which will be before graduation for sure.
We miss you too. Come back for mystery night. So no, but seriously, Jack, it's been great. All right.
All right, that's it. So a heartfelt thank you again to Jack for taking the time to talk with me. Personally, I really find Jack's journey with Market Snacks and his passion for the project inspiring, and I really look forward to following along as he and his team continue to grow. We'll leave links to where you can subscribe to Market Snacks in the show notes, so definitely check those out and give the show a listen. I think you'll really enjoy it. And thank you so much for listening. Business Beyond Usual is brought to you by the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan. Executive producers are Marjay Smiles, Sheila Lau, Christopher Ankney, and for this episode, me, Charlie Grant. Our full team of MBA producers includes Andres Fuentes-Affleck, who was a co-producer of this show, Leslie Chang, Adam Fasher, Jamel Curler, Stephanie Simpson, Dylan Corey, and Jason Rock. As always, thanks to Jonah Brockman for recording and editing help with portions of today's show. Until next time, I'm Charlie, and this is Business Beyond Usual.